The famous butter cow at the Iowa State Fair gets doused with fake blood by vandals. And the shrimp corn dog takes top honors in the fair's new food contest. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, we'll talk with Des Moines Register columnist Kyle Munson, who is at the Iowa State Fair. We'll hear about the butter cow vandalism and some other goings-on. Also, a look back at Rag Bri. Then in the second half hour, we'll sort out the effects of the cool weather on the harvest with Iowa State University crop markets specialist Chad Hart. Also, a new law is cracking down on some Iowa RV owners and Iowa's first digitized cemetery. That's all coming up this hour after a look at the news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A grab bag of news to talk about this hour. Later in the hour, we'll talk about how our crops have been faring in cool weather as of late and how that's been affecting the crops market. Also, we'll hear about Iowa's first digitized cemetery. But first of all, Kyle Munson is joining us, Des Moines Register columnist. Welcome, Kyle.
Oh, hey, thanks, Ben. Great to be here, live from the fair, I guess.
Yes, you've been covering the fair. We've been reading your columns and want to check in with you about a number of things happening at today's fair and reading your column today. The fair, by the way, runs August 8th through the 18th, ends this coming Sunday. Today's edition starts off with your line, "Just when it looked as if the Missouri State Fair would trump us this year on the scandal scale, with a rodeo clown wearing a President Obama mask, the Iowa State Fair grabbed headlines with our hallowed butter cow smeared in fake blood." What happened, Kyle?
Well, you know, you never quite expect, you can't expect what's going to happen every year at the fair. This year, there was at least one or two, perhaps, individuals who hid out in the agriculture building overnight on Saturday night, and by Sunday morning, the butter cow was discovered doused in red paint, fake blood, with the words "Freedom for All" smeared on the viewing glass in the agriculture building. And so, of course, the butter cow is, you know, has been here for more than a century at the state fair. It's become this quirky Iowa icon, this public art piece, and there's always a thematic sculpture every year, and this year it's Abraham Lincoln, as well as a sculpture to salute the centennial of the Lincoln Highway. Anyway, the butter cow was attacked as a statement against animal slaughter, by animal rights activists. And so it became this topic yesterday at the fair, because the fair officials were able to kind of clean this up in the wee hours of Sunday before the building even opened.
So to just scrape off the paint a bit.
To scrape off the paint a bit, you know, reshape. And so, you know, my heart goes out to sculptor Sarah Pratt, who's been the lead butter sculptor here for since 2006. So she had to like, furiously kind of, repair the cow early Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. But the news began to break yesterday morning, you know, as this whatever, however many members constitute this liberation group,
right.
They sent around this photo to media that showed the cow doused in the blood and mm-hmm. the fake blood. Anyway, so here we have a little mini cow controversy.
Right, right. It's the group calls itself Iowans for Animal Liberation. They claimed responsibility, and I understand this is under investigation. What do we know about this group?
Well, very little. I mean, there are other similar groups around the nation, around the globe, and some that have commented on this and applauded, you know, the attack on the cow and the tactics and that kind of a thing. But we know very little, if anything, about this group. And there was just another law enforcement briefing this morning, and they had nothing new to share based on what I heard. No arrests, nothing of that sort. Mm-hmm. But the fair has pledged to beef up security, as it were, on the cow overnight. And to make more moves that way.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, in talking about this with fairgoers, as you're on site there at the Iowa State Fair in Des Moines, have you heard some reaction?
Yeah, you know, it was yesterday was also Veterans Day at the fair with, a parade of like 100 different entries and all sorts of, floats and buses and, veterans from around the state. So we had a lot of politicians here. Senator Chuck Grassley's message to the Vandals was, get real. And I think that summed up the mood for a lot of people. My favorite quote was probably from a farmer from Riverside, Iowa, in southeast Iowa, not far from you. And he said, well, that's kind of the state fair equivalent of somebody shooting a bald eagle. So,
not likely to gain a lot of sympathy with that one.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there was some, it's an interesting debate. So, you know, you always want to give people, and here, even the Des Moines Register here, most years at the fair has a soapbox for politicians
right.
and people to come speak their minds and debate issues. Well, but there was somebody had tweeted online, and I thought it summed it up nicely. When you attack a symbol, you know, that only hurts your message. So, you know, if you want to, this was the easy avenue to get to the media probably for, you know, whoever did this.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, obscured their message, probably harmed their cause when they could have done any number of other things at the fair that might have been more effective.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Des Moines Register is a political soapbox missing this year during a sort of an off-election year or off-campaign year. No politicking at the Iowa State Fair? Say it ain't so, Kyle.
Well, it's been pretty mild. Relative to last year or, you know, other years, it's, you know, almost nothing. Rick Santorum was here. I don't think he was wearing a sweater vest. I didn't see him personally, but based on the photos I saw, he made a brief appearance. I met the new U.S. Commerce Secretary, Penny Pritzker. She was here, you know, obviously not campaigning. She was doing what she called a listening tour around the country, and the State Fair, I believe, was her fifth and final stop. And then again, yesterday we had the governor, Lieutenant Governor Chuck Grassley here for the Veterans Day ceremonies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, food always a big part of the Iowa State Fair. And the news this morning that I got, I imagine you got it too, the shrimp corn dog taking top honors in the new food contest this year at the Iowa State Fair. It bested two other finalists after receiving 75% of the votes. And it's described as three fresh shrimp dipped in corn dog batter, fried to golden perfection and topped with a sweet jalapeno glaze. Have you had one of these?
Well, no, that's interesting, though, because I'm planning to have one just a little bit later today. We've been doing these live broadcasts for, you know, at DesMoinesRegister.com from the fair every day, and I try to feature a new food every time, and that's what I'm going to try today. You know, I've had Cajun cheese curds. I've had deep-fried brownies are new this year.
Deep-fried brownies?
Deep-fried brownies, as if the brownie wasn't enough. That's right. I mean, it's crazy. But I will say that to have the shrimp corn dog win, that is news, because it does not feature bacon. I mean, to have any kind of food substance trump bacon at this fair is newsworthy these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been reporting on news not too long ago here in Iowa. It's actually got an Iowa connection, because we've got some people now farming shrimp in Iowa, on Iowa farms. So it's not like it's something foreign to us, is it?
Yeah, I know. Who would have thought? But this landlocked state can surprise you sometimes when it comes to our agricultural innovation.
Now, you've been writing about a number of interesting things. Another column you wrote about Floppy. Floppy's been making news. In fact, a bit of controversy at the Iowa State Fair. For those who haven't grown up in central Iowa, tell us who Floppy is.
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, this was the inanimate object I thought maybe was under true threat at the fair, not the butter cow, but it turned out to be the butter cow. So I grew up in southwest Iowa, so I was not part of the Floppy cult when I was a kid either. I was sort of introduced to this by some of my college friends, you know, later in life. Floppy is a beagle puppet, and he was the star with Dwayne Ellett, his handler, of a children's show on TV in central Iowa for 30 years, from 1957 to 1987. And so you had generations of kids, you know, primarily Des Moines and then, you know, central Iowa, growing up, going on this show, watching this show. And so it became this huge, beloved icon. And then after, you know, Dwayne's death in 1987, of course, that ended the show. And then for the last 20 years, this puppet, Floppy, was in an exhibit in the State Historical Museum. Well, then Floppy needed to be repaired, and that exhibit in the lobby of the museum was removed earlier this year, prompting this, I don't know, I mean, I guess unexpected backlash, but, you know, I guess it could have been predicted in a lot of ways. And so it became this controversy. Where is Floppy? What's going to be done with Floppy? Why are you taking Floppy away from his fans? And so the compromise that was worked out right before he goes into rehab, restoration more accurately, he's being displayed in the Varied Industries building at the fair this year in the governor's booth. So okay. Floppy is in the plexiglass case. You can walk by and take your picture with him.
Okay, in a plexiglass case. It's not like Floppy will talk with you as a fairgoer.
Right, no. Floppy will not be talking, and you can't splatter paint on him. He's in a plexiglass case, so he's safe. He's reasonably safe.
Now, you've been meeting some interesting people there at the Iowa State Fair. Interesting column you wrote about a woman who was last on the Iowa State Fairgrounds when she was in the womb.
Yeah, that might have been the most offbeat thing I've written at the fair yet. But it, she was fun to meet her and her family. Yeah, Tanisha Harris from Inglewood, California. Now, back in 1977, she was born in Des Moines. Her parents came to the fairgrounds August 20th, 1977, and walked everywhere around these fairgrounds because, you know, Tanisha's mom was painfully pregnant. Tanisha was 2 weeks past due. And so then, just hours after they left the fairgrounds that day, she went into labor, went to Mercy Hospital, and Tanisha was born. Well, so, you know, these fairgrounds were this kind of important, fabled setting in Tanisha's life, but she had never been back. She moved to Omaha, you know, when she was just a toddler. She moved away to the West Coast then and just had never been back to the state fair, so she finally made her belated return. And then I caught up with her and her family, and it was kind of a fun, quirky little story. But mm-hmm. they had a lot of fun on Sunday.
Did she have a sense that she'd been there before?
I don't know if there was any sort of childhood mojo from being in the womb or anything like that. She didn't. But, you know, it was kind of a full circle trip for her. All right. She called it a culminating trip, you know. So, you know, it was important for her to finally do it all these years. And anyway, so, and the music of the fairgrounds was important to her. Her family kind of has roots in a Baptist church that once existed here in Des Moines. And anyway, so mm-hmm. a lot of different kind of, yeah. you know, you can pull. That's the thing about this fair with, you know, more than a million people every year. I mean, there's no way we could have, like, you know, 5,000, you know, journalists here, and we could never catch all the stories. Each person has this individual kind of history with the fair.
Right. So. If you just joined us, Kyle Munson is my guest for this first half hour, Des Moines Register columnist, and we're checking with him in with him about a number of things he's experienced at the Iowa State Fair. But also now I'd like to switch gears to RAGBRAI, because I know you were on RAGBRAI a couple weeks ago, Kyle.
That's right.
I was on the ride the whole week as well. We didn't run into each other, did we?
You were there. Oh, I missed you. Well, next time, are you gonna? If you ride next year, we should plan a day to ride together. And actually, the ride went through the fairgrounds, obviously.
Yes. This is your first time on RAGBRAI?
No. So this is the third. This is the third straight year that I've actually bicycled and also written and reported along the ride. So, mm-hmm. you know, every year I've learned the hard way how to be a better bicyclist. And, you know, a decade or so ago I covered it by car, but, you know, you really can't experience this rolling circus unless you're out there in a bike seat. I mean, you see so many things, and it's, you know, the State Fair is the largest annual event in Iowa. RAGBRAI is this even more bizarre kind of circus in which, you know, you have people from around the world that congregate in the middle, you know, of these small town squares, and it's just this whole, you know, it's this magical little environment.
It is.
But, you know, you were out there, so you probably know. I mean, this was like a beautiful year weather-wise.
It was, with a couple of exceptions, especially that last day going into Fort Madison. We had the wind at our back. It was a beautiful day, maybe 70 degrees, very cool. Mm-hmm. And so hearing from many RAGBRAI riders, this was the easiest and one of the best weather RAGBRAIs in memory, right?
Yeah, I have to agree, especially after last year when it was...
Oh, boy,
I mean, it was torturous for a lot of people. It was so hot, and there were some long days. So this was almost a makeup year in a lot of ways, conditions wise.
I was caught in the one exception to the weather, the great weather generally, the terrible hailstorm in Perry. I experienced that in a tent and thought I was a goner. where were you with that one?
Well, see, that's my rule, Ben. See, I, you know, from the start, I pledged never to camp on RAGBRAI.
So oh, okay.
I, I stay, and don't get me wrong, it's not that I'm not staying in the lap of luxury. What my whole goal is, I stay with Iowans along the way, so I'm always staying in like somebody's home in, sure. in the overnight towns, and that's been a wonderful way to kind of meet people. Because you not only meet the people you're staying with, but sometimes other teams are staying there too. So so that's been good fun. So I was down kind of in the Ragbri Expo area in Perry, so I got caught in the rain, had to bike quickly back. But no, I stayed overnight in the home and stayed dry.
Mm-hmm. Now it's always interesting. I found it a joy to look at everybody's the biking jerseys that you see along the way. I had a favorite, and I. After seeing their jersey, I stayed away from them. Actually, not. The Donner Party from California, their slogan, "We eat the slow ones."
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the creativity of the teams on Ragbri is great, too. You know, they have these old school buses that they customize, and they, you know, have these platforms on top where they, it's a party deck, and they can carry their bikes. At other times. But yeah, so the Donner Party, oh, I don't know. There's so many. The Team Butt Ice. I could go on and on. I've traveled under the Team Sauerkraut banner because that's kind of part of my family's German heritage and my
there
parents
you go.
Always
All right.
make sauerkraut. So, you know, there's if you can think of it, there's probably a team for it out there.
Right. Just an amazing number of experiences you have, quirky experiences. I met a farmer. And this was at 8 a.m., a farmer on the side of the road serving free shots of whiskey. did you happen upon him?
I missed that, but, you know, I do remember that biking out of Fairfield that last day, like early in the morning as the sun's coming up, and, like, the medical center on the edge of town was selling breakfast burritos, and I hadn't had breakfast, so I stopped there for a quick coffee. And there was just a woman. There was a giant flatbed trailer. And she was the only person on the flatbed. It wasn't like she had a band or anything, with a PA. And she was warbling out, like, her own original poetry. And then occasionally she would sing Willie Nelson's On the Road Again or whatever. Anyway, it became this unintentional comedy show. But she, it was in the spirit of
Ragbri. I do remember writing by her. She was magnificent. Now, you mentioned in your column in the run-up to Ragbri that Jay Leno riffed on Lance Armstrong about a minute into his monologue a few days before this year's Ragbri.
And Lance Armstrong has entered his first cycling event since confessing to doping. He'll participate in the Des Moines Register's annual Great Bicycle Race. You know why he's competing? It's in his blood. He can't get it out. He can't get it out. It's in there.
Did you see a little bit of audio there from Jay Leno prior to Ragbri? Did you run across Lance Armstrong?
I did. I had one of my colleague Bryce Miller sat down with him in Perry at the hotel in Perry for an interview, and I had spoken to Lance before the ride and just kind of asked him about, you know, why is he coming on Ragbri, what does he plan to do, and then I just saw him briefly in Perry, and so he spent to his credit, he spent a few quality days riding Ragbri, and he hung out, but it's true, everybody was questioning, why is he doing this?
Yes.
And he does have a long history of, making at least, kind of one-day appearances on Ragbri. He has a really good relationship with, the Ragbri director, T.J. Juskowitz. And so there are a lot of reasons he did it. But, of course, everybody is wondering, well, post-Oprah interview in January, this must be part of his career rehab plan.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's what, Jay and everybody else is riffing on, I guess.
Right. And during the ride, I spoke with some people who had actually ridden with him for a few minutes. Evidently, he goes out early. He does the entire day's ride in 2 to 3 hours, jetting through it, and not a lot of carousing, not a lot of contact with people.
Right. Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, I suppose somebody like that, both that famous and that controversial, probably feels like they have to be a little bit careful. But yeah, he was occasionally spotted. He signed autographs Saturday night in Council Bluffs before the ride started. And he rode with his team, Mellow Johnny's, his, bike shop out
yep.
of Boston. He's, he didn't spend time kind of associating himself with Livestrong on the ride, obviously, because those ties have been severed
right.
for
mm-hmm.
various sundry legal reasons. But he rode with the Mellow Johnny's folks.
Notable this year, some free skinny dipping at a couple of farm ponds. Did you take part in that, Kyle?
Yeah. I didn't skinny dip. I can verify that. But I did, there were There were backyard pools. I saw people, and there was an amazing water slide. I'm forgetting now which town it was in, but I think it was Team Lizard had this tremendous party along the route, and they had probably the best water slide I saw of the year. So, yeah, the water sports are always crucial on Ragbri.
A surprise for me, I guess it shouldn't have been a surprise, but it was notable, and I know you've written about this in your columns, the mobile boom boxes of all sorts. People have even little trailers for their boom boxes. And you either, as a Ragbri rider, when they pass you or you pass them, you either find this extremely energizing or just plain obnoxious.
Yeah, it depends on the song selection. And it's true, you do hear like a high percentage of like classic rock. Like, I can't count the times I've heard Boston or REO Speedwagon or Styx or whatever out there on the bike. So that demographic is strong. But yeah, I do have stereo envy. And one of these days I'll put the best ones I've heard are those like those bazookas you put on the back fender.
Right.
But yeah, people customize old, coolers that they pull on trailers. You hear all kinds of stuff out there. Mm-hmm. And there was a point biking out of Pella, and I was late coming out of Pella, and I was tired, and I was one of the only ones in the road. And I did have a moment where a team swept by me, and they were blaring some music. And that probably kept me going for a few miles.
Well, what song was it?
It was an LCD Sound System track, and I don't remember the song, but I remember they were talking, I remember it was LCD Sound System.
Mm-hmm. So physically, how did you hold up this year on your ride, Kyle Munson, your third year?
Good, because I see, it is like kind of a biking masterclass too. Ragbri is, if you're not like an elite racing cyclist already. So the first, a couple of years ago, I learned how not to hurt my knees. Mm-hmm. Last year, I learned how not to hurt my back. And this year, I escaped without any major injury. So, third time was a charm.
Well, you haven't mentioned your backside, because that's a key element in Ragbri, too. That held up.
Right. And I think that, yeah, and that just, you just kind of live with that. So that hasn't been too bad for me. But, I do wear the padded shorts.
All right. Last question, Kyle Munson, on Ragbri. All the pies you can eat on Ragbri. You're a pie fan?
Yeah, I am. I don't go crazy with it. I wasn't to the extent of National Public Radio colleagues, Don Gagne and his cronies, who were riding as no pie refused. I mean, they were stopping for pie intentionally. But I sampled some good, apple and rhubarb and, I don't know what else. So I had a few pieces.
Right, I did too. I indulged in the pie and found out my newfound love in pie is raisin pie.
Oh, I didn't have that. Raisin cream or just...
No, just straight up raisin pie.
Oh, wow.
Put it on your list for next year's Ragbri, Kyle.
I will. That sounds delish. Yeah, so, I doubt we'll have as easy a ride next year, but it'll be memorable as always.
Kyle Munson, Des Moines Register columnist, thank you for checking in with us live from the Iowa State Fair. Kyle Munson, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ben.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll sort out the effects of the cool weather on the harvest and hear from Iowa State University crop markets specialist Chad Hart. Also hear about a new law cracking down on Iowans who buy RVs and then set up LLCs in Montana to register the vehicles so as to avoid paying the 5% Iowa registration fee. And Iowa's first digitized cemetery. Where is it? And what does getting your gravesite digitized mean for your virtual afterlife? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
We bid our plays and our trades till we think we might die. Far from North America, where the buildings are old and you might have lots of mimes. I hate the feeling when you're looking at me that way. Cause we're North Americans, but if we act all shy.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're catching up this hour on a number of Iowa news items. Later in this half hour, we'll hear about a new law cracking down on some Iowans who buy RVs and then perform what you could call a sleight of hand with the registration that involves Montana. Also, later, Iowa's first digitized cemetery, where it is, and what does getting your gravesite digitized mean for your virtual afterlife? And in just a few minutes, we'll sort out the effects of this cool weather on the harvest and hear from Iowa State University crop market specialist Chad Hart. But first, let's get an update on our weather. What's been happening from National Weather Service meteorologist in Des Moines, Roger Vahalik. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going really well. So we've had this stretch of cool, dry weather in August, no less. What's happening?
Well, we continue with a northwesterly flow, and traditionally across the Midwest that favors a drier pattern, and it also favors some cooler weather. Now, the entire state hasn't been dry, but we have continued to see over all the past 60 days a deficit of rainfall, especially from portions of northwest Iowa through central and southeastern Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Are there concerns if this weather continues? What could happen?
Well, obviously, if we continue with drier weather, we may push ourselves back into some drought conditions, and that may be, in fact, occurring already to some degree across parts of western and central Iowa. What we are hoping for, obviously, is to get some beneficial rains going into the rest of the late fall into the winter season after the harvest hopefully is complete.
Mm-hmm. Does this cool, dry weather have anything to do with the wet spring that we had?
Not necessarily. We actually were very lucky to have the rains that we did earlier in the spring months. Had we not had that going into the summer, and we may have had even drier conditions, much like last year, we didn't get any rain early on, and then it just heated up very quickly. A little bit different pattern, but it was fortunate that we did have those earlier rains this spring.
Mm-hmm. So, Roger, what is in our immediate forecast? Do we have any rain?
Well, we have a chance for some rain coming up here yet this week, I believe about Thursday night into maybe Friday. But the overall pattern remains the same, basically northwesterly flow. So sporadic rainfall across the state, much like we've had here just the past few days. Some areas getting good rainfall, but then other spots not seeing a whole lot. And that's more typical of a summer-type situation.
Mm-hmm. Anything longer range? Will this almost fall-like weather continue on into the fall?
Well, the 30-day outlook through the rest of the month favors slightly below normal temperatures over Iowa. Beyond that, we have pretty much equal chances of being either cool or warm going into the rest of the fall. But for the next, say, 10 days or so, it's either going to be near to slightly below normal. And rainfall, more than likely, it'll be slightly below normal. But we've had some hints of at least getting some precipitation here. And maybe the cycle now is about every 4 to 5 days, if we're lucky with that.
Roger Vahalik, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Des Moines. Thanks for letting us check in with you.
No problem.
Now let's sort out the effects of the cool weather on the harvest and also on the crop markets. Joining us to do that, Iowa State University crop markets specialist Chad Hart joining us by phone. Hi, Chad.
How we doing, Ben?
I'm doing very well. We just heard the forecast, what's been going on with our weather. Now we want to look at the impact it's been having on our agriculture. What has the relatively cool, dry weather done to the crop harvest outlook, commodity prices?
Well, in this case, especially in Iowa, as Roger mentioned, the idea of the cool, sort of dry weather has actually been semi-helpful for our crops as we move through the season. The wet spring put us behind in crop planting, so we got the crops in the fields a little later, and that caused things to back up as far as the crops are concerned. Having the cool weather here in July and August has actually helped the crops. They haven't been stressed as much, given that they have a lack of rainfall. And so in our case, it's not been a great situation, but it hasn't been incredibly terrible yet either.
Mm-hmm. Had we had the searing dry heat we had last year, it would have been similar to last year, perhaps.
Probably even worse, actually, in this case, because when you think about, as Roger mentioned, the idea is that, you know, if it weren't for those early season rains, we would have had almost no moisture to work with here. And I will say this, what we're seeing in Iowa is sort of unique to Iowa. When we look at the rest of the corn crop across the country, we're seeing very good conditions for the most part. So Iowa's really been the place that struggled with corn production this year.
Mm-hmm. What about beans, soybeans?
Beans, a similar sort of thing there. Again, the wet conditions in the spring delayed our planting. Cool, dry weather through the summer has helped shepherd the crop along, but it's still behind. And probably the biggest concern we have now for both crops is as we look to fall, the possibility of when that early freeze could occur. You know, I was glad Roger said that as you look out there right now, we're not seeing that when we look at the 1 to 3 month outlook. It looks like there's a, you know, equal chance of being above or below. So there's nothing pointing to that freeze necessarily coming to get us.
Mm-hmm. Because we're cooler now, it doesn't mean we're going to just edge up and become cooler earlier on in the fall.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You know, in this case, as he mentioned, the idea is just because we're cool now, no, we've got an equal chance of looking at a fall that could be colder, could be warmer.
Mm-hmm. So as a farmer, and I'm sure you're in contact with farmers, what are your concerns? These concerns, what are you thinking? What are you weighing in your mind? What are you perhaps tossing and turning at night about?
Well, in this case, the issue has been because Iowa, you know, like I say, we're the one sort of struggling on our production side, even though things have, you know, been okay, but the rest of the country is looking very good. That has USDA looking at record corn production and record soybean production throughout the country. That has put significant downward pressure on prices, and so where farmers are really, if you will, sweating right now.
We're down below $5, aren't we?
We're well down below $5. As I look at futures right now, we're in the 450 range. That would translate to a cash price in Iowa around 420.
And how high were we last year?
Oh, we were in the 7 states. So mm-hmm. You've seen nearly a 50% drop in prices over the past year to year and a half. At the same time, their cost of producing the crop has just increased. And so they're getting caught in a squeeze right now.
Mm-hmm. What are the knock-on effects, some of the effects of having the tumbling corn prices?
Well, I think for Iowa, when you look at us, we are still a heavily agricultural-dependent state. You know, I'd say I think roughly a quarter of our state GDP is related to agriculture. And so having our crop sector struggle with low prices does have an impact for our general economy.
Mm-hmm. What about perhaps helping livestock producers who feed corn?
It definitely can help them. As we look at the livestock side right now, definitely having lower corn and soybean prices does help them on the feed side. The issue they're having right now is more what I'll call a lack of strong consumer demand, especially from the U.S. market. Mm-hmm. As the general economy went through the recession and we've seen a fairly slow recovery, we've seen fairly slow growth in domestic meat demand.
Mm-hmm. Meats across the board.
Meats across the board. Beef has struggled more than pork. Probably the poultry chicken is in the best situation right now.
Okay, so are we in the bottom of meat prices? As consumers, should we see higher meat prices coming?
It is likely that we will continue to see higher meat prices coming. Because of two factors going on here. One, I'm going to argue, is as demand picks up, you should see prices start to rise. The other is that over the past, especially 3 to 4 years, we've seen our livestock numbers, especially for beef, shrink. And as you have fewer animals out there, it means tighter supplies at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the impact on these this record crop, right? Nearly 14 billion bushels of corn this year. That's not just in Iowa. That's across the country, I think, right?
That is across the country. That is a record by a little over 5% compared to our previous record back in 2009. And that is helping drive those corn prices significantly down from last year.
What could stand in the way of that record crop coming in?
The biggest thing right now I would say would be that potential for early freeze.
Okay.
As you look at not only Iowa, but Minnesota, the Dakotas, over into Wisconsin and Michigan, the crop is a little bit behind because of the late planting, and given the cool and dry weather across most of the upper Midwest, it has the crop, you know, it's stayed behind in maturity. And mm-hmm. So if it doesn't beat the freeze, you can have a significant drop in yield.
Now, with those tumbling corn prices, you said down around $4.50 a bushel. What is the impact on our ethanol industry here in Iowa?
For the ethanol industry, having corn prices drop does definitely help them on the cost side. An ethanol plant, if you will, is like a hog or cattle farm in that corn is its feedstock. As you look at ethanol, probably the two bigger issues there are, yes, their costs are coming down, but we've also seen gasoline and ethanol prices work their way down. Also, with ethanol, we've reached the blend wall as far as how much ethanol we can push into the gasoline economy here in the U.S., and that's creating problems as
that's,
well.
That's a technical blend wall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Just our engines can't be made to eat up more ethanol than they
well,
do
now. Yeah, in this case, with the engines we have out there, they've been approved for a 10% blend of ethanol. Actually, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency has approved 15%, but yeah, that's about as far as we're likely to push most vehicles that are on the road today.
Okay, thank you very much. Chad Hart, Iowa State University Crop Markets Specialist, we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Well, thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, catching up on a new few news items throughout the hour. Let's touch on a couple more. A new law cracking down on Iowans who buy RVs and then perform what you might call is a registration fee sleight of hand. Here to tell us about that, joining us, State Senator Todd Bowman, a Democrat from Maquoketa, author and floor manager of the new law, which went into effect July 1st. Senator Bowman, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
How were Iowans, some RV owners in this state, getting around the registering of their vehicles in Iowa?
Well, let me clarify. It's not just RV owners. It's any kind of vehicle. It just tends to be the high-end vehicles, which RVs can run, but it could also be a very expensive Jaguar or any other kind of vehicle. So it's not just limited to RVs. And what they were doing is they were registering the vehicle out of state in Montana. They would set up a fake LLC, so it had no legitimate business purposes, just a post office box, pay a fee, and then they would register their vehicle in the state of Montana, which they allowed. And the state of Iowa is not receiving their registration fee.
Do you have a rough number of Iowans who were doing this?
Well, it's hundreds.
Hundreds of Iowans.
Well, at least 100 plus, so over 100 cases that, you know, they're investigating in regard to that.
Mm-hmm. When did you first realize that this was going on and obviously a problem?
Well, I think it presented itself to me probably at least a year ago, if not maybe a little bit longer. We did have a bill somewhat similar to this the session before. It didn't have the legs. I didn't write it. I didn't work with it. And so then I kind of adapted it and changed it a little bit to try to get some more support for it. And most importantly, just educate my colleagues on what this is and, you know, how important it is for everybody who pays their registration fee to know that everybody else is paying their fair share also.
Right, because this is creates a shortfall in money. What is the difference there? How much money are we talking about will be gained by having this now law in effect since July 1st?
We're talking over $1 million, and the money goes directly to the Road Use Tax Fund, which is, if anybody's been keeping up, is underfunded by approximately $200 million. So every nickel that we can get that's supposed to go to that account, you know, I think it's our obligation to make sure they're doing that. And so, you know, we have people actually reporting people now. They're aware of what the scam is. And we have people self-reporting. They're calling in or going to their revenue department, the treasurer, county treasurer. And so we're going to see a little bit more of this iceberg, if you will, the tip of the iceberg. And then hopefully, you know, within 6 months, we will have accomplished what we want, and there'll still be a few perpetrators out there. But for the most part, I think, you know, getting the word out that this isn't acceptable anymore,
mm-hmm.
and that there's a serious penalty that goes with it, I think most Iowans will accept the rule of the law and say, okay, well, that loophole no longer exists, and we need to follow the law.
Mm-hmm. How can I recognize a vehicle, an RV or
well,
a Jaguar?
Or,
yeah, how do you find
it's pretty
it?
Pretty easy. I went to an Iowa football game this fall because I was told that you know, there's quite a few high-end RVs that love to park and go to the football games. And all you have to do is walk, and you know, there's just not that many Montana people that are huge Hawkeye fans at the football games. So they stick out pretty quickly when.
So
you
they've,
see
got
them.
Montana, they've got Montana.
They got Montana plates. But they live in, you know, they vote. All their residency is in the state of Iowa.
Okay, so, they're willing to support the Hawkeyes, but not the roads to go see the Hawkeyes.
I guess not.
You talked about a similar legislation not making it passed. I wonder what forces were you facing in the legislature that you had to overcome here.
Well, it was kind of an interesting hoe, if you will. We passed it out of the Senate Transportation Committee, and then on the full floor, 48-2. And then it went over to the House, and it got stuck in the Ways and Means Committee, and it didn't come out. So I had to resubmit it as an amendment on the standings bill, which is kind of a catch-all bill at the end of session. And I had to try to get support not only from my caucus, but the other caucus in a conference committee where they negotiate what's going to be in that last bill. And fortunately, both sides saw it as an important bill, and it was successfully passed that way.
Okay.
And the governor signed it.
Will we be able to draw a direct line between this and perhaps a few less potholes in our roads?
I sure
better
hope
bridges.
So. Yeah. Yeah, safer bridges.
Safer bridges. State Senator Todd Bowman, Democrat of Maquoketa, thank you very much for sharing with us the story of a new law that went into effect July 1st. Watch those Montana license plates. We can't say for sure anyone with Montana plates in the state is doing this, but it could be an indication, right?
Absolutely.
Senator Bowman, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye now. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and as we end near the end of the show, let's talk about some Iowa news about the end of life. Iowa City has become among the first cities in the state to digitize its cemetery. All 20,000 records from plots in Oakland Cemetery have been compiled into an online publicly accessible database. Here to tell us a little bit more about that, Marion Carr is the Iowa City City Clerk. Marion Carr, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What does this mean for Oakland Cemetery visitors?
Well, for the visitors, it means that they can use the site to search for burials ahead of time. They do not need to schedule their visits with traditional office hours. They can use the site to search for burials by name or location, and they can actually get a map and view cemetery records prior to the time that they visit.
Okay, so we're going online, and do you have a website or a way to find it, actually, if people want to virtually tour Oakland Cemetery?
Sure. There's a number of different ways to access it, but the easiest way is to go www.icgov.org.
Mm-hmm.
And then selecting on the top bar the A through Z index and simply checking C for cemetery,
mm-hmm.
and it'll take you to the cemetery main page. And right now it's the very front of that page, and it welcomes you to the new cemetery map and database and walks you through the steps on how to access it and how it works.
Mm-hmm. And I understand it's a color-coded map. What colors do we see and what do they mean?
Well, it's a color-coded map, and we have a light yellow, which means that the space is for sale. We have a green, which indicates it's sold. We have blue, which indicates it is sold and there is a burial on site. There's a gray shape that is for monuments. And then we have some red, which are reserved spots, and those are spots that they may have some obstructions, they may have large trees, they may have water lines. They are not for sale and are restricted or reserved for use.
Mm-hmm. Who did the fancy web work for you in this case?
Well, our vendor is Raymaker out of it's a vendor in Wisconsin. They have a number of clients here in the state of Iowa. They have about 21 other clients. But as far as we know, we're the only one that's chosen to do the database online.
Mm-hmm.
And they've worked with us. It's an interesting process that they have worked with us because they're used to working with private cemeteries. And private cemeteries have more latitude on what records are public and what records are not. So in our situation, we're the first one that they've worked with that all of our records are public.
I understand it took a long time to digitize.
It did. We had over 20,000 records dating back to the 1800s. And we did not hire additional staff. We used the staff that we have as time allowed it. And we wanted to protect the integrity of the project. There was a lot of decisions to be made as we went through it. And, again, using existing staff, we had to use available hours. So it took us about 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Some of the records, I understand, hard to decipher.
So, well, many of the records were handwritten. They were not typed. There was no
going back to what year? What would have been our earliest year in the Oakland Cemetery?
I don't have that information in front of me, but I know we have several that date back to the mid-1800s.
Okay.
And we have some information that is missing. We may have had, we may be able to know that there is a baby buried there but not have a name. So I think as people are searching family history, we may be able to even provide more information as individuals alert us of some missing information as they're doing their search.
Okay. Marion Carr, thank you very much.
Thank
Iowa
you.
City Clerk, if you want to tour the Oakland Cemetery with this new online access, as Marion just pointed out, go to icgov.org, www.icgov.org. Look at that A through Z index and find cemetery to tour that cemetery. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Big thanks to John Pemble at the Iowa State Fair today for helping us out with the audio there. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, of course, Politics Wednesday, President Obama on vacation. So we'll talk about vacations in presidential history with Thomas Schwartz of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library. Also, Dennis Goldford of Drake University will be joining us for Politics Wednesday. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.